So first off, I want to do a little catching up with Rose McGowan. Even though Rose didn't watch the debate last night, she was part of the Movement for a People's Party response to debate number 2. I think a lot of people joined Rose in not watching that debate. Rose said something about internet censorship. I'll start with that.
It's a system that oppresses. It is a system that is a cult. And we must break free of the control of these cults. And now is as good a time as any. You know, really, the reality is, I could say, and a lot of people are going to scream at me for this, I could say the male experiment hasn't worked. The male power experiment, because it doesn't benefit anybody, not even men that are not powerful. Only the elites, only the social network masters like Jack Dorsey, the guys at Google, Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook, for instance. Side note, when I posted last night on Facebook that I was going to be speaking after the debate, my Facebook account was deactivated. Just like my Twitter account was deactivated 3 years ago at the behest of Hollywood power brokers, working with the mainstream media, working with many, many, many who are very interested in keeping people without a voice, in keeping people that question and scrutinize the system and say, we can do better. We've been sold a bill of goods. You have been sold a lie.
Yes, we've been told a lie, and part of the lying isn't what they tell us, it's what they won't allow us to hear. I've had multiple accounts deplatformed on Twitter, and like many of you, I frequently end up in Facebook jail. It's an honor, comrades! As followers of the show know, one of the key omissions in mainstream media coverage is with the story of Tara Reid. Rose has said many times that Hollywood is a cabal that protects powerful men. Rose was raped by one of those powerful men who has been protected, and so she was very supportive of Tara when Tara came out with her story. As a side note, Rose is also critical of how the Hollywood cabal works with the DNC and with the deep state, the CIA, and the other military intelligence complex actors. One example is when they flooded the field with new candidates to run against Bernie, and how they kept candidates out in the previous election cycle when Hillary was running. Here's what she said about Tara Reid.
Stop killing. Stop murdering. And when I'm saying murdering and killing, I'm talking about our minds. I'm talking about the poison that is put in on a daily basis, helped out by places like the New York Times and Fox News, of course. The New York Times had a lot of people thinking Hillary was going to win, right? How'd that work out for you? What I've learned a lot about helping people like Tara Reid, Biden's accuser, is fake news is not just what they write, it's what they don't. There's been a blanket silence on me ever since, but I don't really care. I'll keep talking, probably until I'm dead. A lot of you probably hate that. I'm sorry. I'm not always angry. I'm not always mad. But when I think about injustice, then I go a little bit tough. And why not? We're in desperate times. We need help. And the help is going to be us. I get asked, like, who am I going to vote for? I vote for burning it down. I vote for starting over. How? I don't know. That's not my job. I'm better macro, not micro. There are a lot of smart people out there. But here's the thing. We have to do it. Some point in our society, we are going to have to bite the bullet and just suck it up and do the painful thing and make the change we want to be. Or you will be in a cult till you are dead, and you'll pass it on to your sons and your daughters, and it will continue, and it will continue.
Now a follow-up on Rachel Maddow. The worst thing about Rachel Maddow is Russiagate and how she's worked hand in glove with the oligarchs on that story. When retired Floridians were sent a fake email purportedly from the Proud Boys, guess who reported it? Turns out it was actually from Iran, but what everyone should remember is that it didn't do anything, it wouldn't have done anything if people had thought it was from the Proud Boys, and it wouldn't have done anything if people had thought it was from Iran. The amount of money spent, for example, by foreign actors is a drop in the bucket compared to what the Biden campaign is spending on disinformation, and the Trump campaign is spending on disinformation.
Just to give you an example of how dumb some of the people in the establishment media are, well, guess who got caught? pushing some of this stuff, Crystal. Let's throw this up there for my friend Chuck Ross. Rachel Maddow reported this as a serious story and then had the gall to say that she was puzzled why Iran was trying to harm Trump by posing as Proud Boys to threaten Democratic voters. This was a line that was picked up by a lot of resistance Twitter. Well, I don't know. Maybe because they knew that idiots like her were going to report it as fact.
Crystal went on to say that either way, it wouldn't have made much difference. Billions of dollars have been spent on this campaign, and moving the needle even a little bit is difficult to do. So all the people who are upset with me because I said Rachel Maddow is a warmongering corporatist, I wasn't wrong. The worst thing about Rachel is she's way too smart to have this be a mistake. She knows exactly what she's doing. She's a corporate tool, and she absolutely knows it. And of course, we can always leave it to Jimmy Dore to tell us the truth about Hunter Biden's emails and other such nefarious stuff.
The New York Post got a hold of some Hunter Biden emails. They are Hunter Biden's emails. Now, everybody in the establishment media and the Democrats are trying to lie to you and gaslight you, trying to say that that's not true, that that's Russian disinformation. They have absolutely no evidence. All the evidence points the other way. They have no evidence to say that, but they're saying it. Here it is. But there it is. And here is Chris Murphy, senator from Connecticut, Democrat. Joe Biden and all of us should be furious that media outlets are spreading what is very likely Russia propaganda. He has no evidence for that. They just say it. So you remember Twitter was banning the New York Post article on Hunter Biden's emails. They banned it. If you tried to share it, they would shut your thing down because they said it wasn't sourced. What source is this? There's no source. There's no source on that. He's just making that up.
I hate it when they try to shut your thing down. And now for the meat and potatoes. Nancy Pelosi just made herself Trump's best ally. Nothing could have helped the president more than her recent CNN interview, but that's the least of my concerns. By Lauren Martinchek. One of the comments under a video that featured Lauren last time said that they thought she was a little bit naive. Lauren is very young, but she has a great head on her shoulders, and I really enjoy her articles. She is a little naive, but so am I. So unless she gets things blatantly wrong, I'm going to keep featuring her. I think she's great. Her ideas are worth spreading, and if we have to point out where she's naive here and there, it's still worth it. Over the past few years, in the last 6 months in particular, as the election between President Donald Trump and his Democratic rival Joe Biden draws near, it's no secret that I have been frustrated by liberals and center-right Democrats immediately dismissing even the most mild, legitimate critiques of the Democrats and their strategy as helping Trump. Well, I'm not sure what could have given Donald Trump and the Republican Party more ammunition against Democrats than Nancy Pelosi's recent viral exchange on CNN with Wolf Blitzer in regards to the talks about a coronavirus relief bill. The conversation at the end of the interview in particular rapidly devolved after Wolf Blitzer addressed Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna's desire to pass a stimulus bill as soon as possible, ending with, "And I wish you would respect the knowledge that goes into getting, meeting the needs of the American people. But again, you've been defending the administration all this time with no knowledge of the difference between our two bills." I have to say, this is me. The administration is you, Nancy Pelosi. It's not Donald Trump more than it's you and Chuck Schumer. Chucky the Shoom. Back to her. "And I thank you for giving me the opportunity to say that to you in person, virtually." This is me again. "I want you to notice how she's so polite and civil as she rips people. She keeps smiling all the time, and she says the most heinous stuff you can imagine." Blitzer. "All right, Madam Speaker, these are incredibly difficult times right now, and we'll leave it on that note. Thank you so much for joining us." Pelosi. "No, no, we'll leave it on the note that you are not right on this, Wolf, and I hate to say that to you, but I feel confident about it, and I feel confident about my colleagues, and I feel confident about my chairs." Blitzer. "It's not about me. It's about millions of Americans who can't put food on the table, who can't pay the rent, who are having trouble." Pelosi. "And we represent them." Blitzer. "Who are having trouble getting by." Pelosi. "And we represent them." Blitzer. and these long food lines that we see, Pelosi, and we represent them. We represent them. We represent them. Blitzer, I know you are Pelosi. We know them. We represent them. We know them. Blitzer, I'm just saying, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, as they say here in Washington. Madam Speaker, Pelosi, that is always the case, but we're not even close to the good. If anyone thinks that Pelosi is even close to the good, they've got some weird things floating around in their craniums. Blitzer, all right, let's see what happens, because every day is critically, critically important. Thanks so much for joining us. Pelosi, thank you so much for your sensitivity to our constituents' needs. Blitzer, I am sensitive to them because every day I see them on the street begging for food, begging for money. Madam Speaker, thank you so much. Pelosi, have you fed them? We feed them. We feed them. Blitzer, we'll continue this conversation down the road. I forgot to scroll there for a minute. I'm sorry. I'm not going to go back. I have a tight schedule this morning. Back to the story. The thing is, if Pelosi had taken a moment to fully consider what Wolf Blitzer was trying to do, she would have realized he was trying to help her. She would have realized that he was actually attempting to give her an opportunity to try and convince the American people that her refusal to compromise was not actually about being unwilling to hand Donald Trump a relief bill right before the election. Instead, Nancy Pelosi once again managed to show the American people just how smug, elitist, and insulated from our pain and frustration she really is. This is me talking. The other thing I'll say about Lauren is that she's struggling financially. She's revealed that before, and so she's a perfect person to write about this. She hasn't actually said she's struggling, but she's a lot closer to the bottom of the economic ladder than Nancy Pelosi is. So as a result, she's much more qualified to talk about this stuff than Nancy Pelosi is. Some of the best lefty pundits in the business are the ones making the least amount of money. Our inverse and perverse system doesn't reward excellence, it rewards compliance. And that's why Rachel Maddow is at the top of the heap. Oh, and Cenk Uygur, while we're at it. Back to the story. Between the disingenuous, condescending smile on her face when she thanked him for the sensitivity to the needs of the constituents, or the passionate declaration of, "We feed them," I truly cannot decide what disgusted me more. Putting aside the fact that millions of people are currently food insecure, "We feed them" is probably one of the ugliest things a politician could say, let alone a politician pretending to be acting purely in the best interests of the people. "We feed them" leaves the bitter impression that we are nothing more than pests. It leaves the impression that we are less than human, beneath them, as if we're a starving stray cat left on the doorstep that the elites feel they have no choice but to begrudgingly provide with food, that is, until they can get rid of it. Though to be honest, they would probably treat the stray cat with more consideration. That "them" she is referring to is us. I have been doing my best to keep things in perspective. I have been doing my best to contain my anger at the Democratic Party, remind myself of everything at stake, the severity of the threat that Donald Trump poses, and to always keep in mind who I would rather fight. But I do not have it within me to ignore it when any lawmaker, regardless of party, who is entrusted to supposedly serve the American people, sits there and smiles when being reminded of the fact that desperation is growing, people are starving, and there are real-life consequences when they hold our last shred of hope for stability hostage for the sake of a partisan game. Frankly, Nancy Pelosi, as well as Donald Trump and Steve Mnuchin, are lucky. They are lucky that most Americans have yet to realize their criminal sociopathic failure means if we don't get one passed soon, we will likely not get a coronavirus relief bill until February at the earliest. That means that millions of people who lost their jobs in a nation where 40% of people couldn't afford a $400 emergency even before the pandemic will be going almost an entire year with only a one-time check of $1,200 to sustain them. In the middle of winter, as the pandemic rages, more jobs are lost, and people are evicted in the cold, our politicians will continue to bicker about giving crumbs. We are not a failing state. We have already failed. In all honesty, the knowledge that Donald Trump and his campaign staff are almost certainly going to use this as ammunition against Democrats as we approach the election is the very least of my concerns with this interview. But it's surreal, to say the least, watching someone who never ceases to remind the American people of the dangers of President Trump become his best ally. Just like Donald Trump appeared to put the final nail in the coffin of his campaign when he ended the stimulus talks over a tweet, leave it to Nancy Pelosi to manage to lose the leverage she had gained over the president afterwards in a single interview. And of course, leave it to liberals to be more outraged by Wolf Blitzer daring to mildly challenge Pelosi than they are about millions of people being unable to put food on their tables. And now a Guardian article about Dianne Feinstein. She represents the past. A Senate hug symbolizes California's Dianne Feinstein fatigue. The senator's response to the Supreme Court hearings has sparked calls for her retirement. Many of her progressive colleagues have sought it for years. This is by Vivian Ho. It was a hug that would have shocked many, even in a year without social distancing. Dianne Feinstein, the top Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee, ending a contentious week of Supreme Court confirmation hearings with a full-body embrace of Lindsey Graham, the committee's Republican chair. The hug and her remarks about the hearings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett, "This has been one of the best set of hearings I've participated in," sparked calls among progressives for her retirement and outcry that she had been in office for too long. Many of the California senator's constituents and her more progressive Democratic Party colleagues have been arguing that for years. There have been a number of us in San Francisco that for a long time felt that, without taking away from what she has accomplished, it has gotten to a point where she is out of touch with where San Francisco is and where California is, said David Campos, chair of the San Francisco Democratic Party. He was not speaking on behalf of the organization. She represents the past of San Francisco and California, Campos continued. It's not surprising that at a time when we're facing a crisis, when we have a right-wing supremacist being rushed through the Supreme Court, she's not up to the task. And it's not because of her age, it's just because of who she is. Feinstein became mayor of San Francisco in 1978 following the assassinations of the activist Harvey Milk and Mayor George Moscone, and moved city politics firmly back to center. Although her legacy in the city is one of respect, given her lengthy history of public service, her penchant for civility and not rocking the boat feels out of place in today's politics, her critics say. In 2018, the California Democratic Party voted to endorse Feinstein's opponent in the state's U.S. Senate race. With a four-term incumbent, Feinstein has served in the Senate since 1992, winning just 7% of the endorsement vote. A recent push to rename public schools honoring historical figures with racist or colonialist legacies has included an elementary school named after her. The School Names Advisory Committee noted that when Feinstein was mayor of San Francisco in 1986, she not only allowed a Confederate flag to fly in front of City Hall, but pushed to prosecute the black activist who removed it in protest. And few have forgotten when a group of young climate activists engaged Feinstein in San Francisco and she told them, "You didn't vote for me."
"We're gonna go in and share this letter, and we're gonna do it all together. Yeah. Share it in front of Feinstein. We're asking her to vote yes on the Green New Deal.
We are trying to ask you to vote yes on the Green New Deal.
Please. Okay, I'll tell you what. We have our own Green New Deal.
Some scientists have said that we have 12 years to turn this around.
Well, it's not going to get turned around in 10 years. What we can do is
Senator, if this doesn't get turned around in 10 years, you're looking at the faces of the people who are going to be living with these consequences.
The government is supposed to be for the people and by the people and all for the people.
You know what's interesting about this group? I've been doing this for 30 years. I know what I'm doing. You come in here and you say it has to be my way or the highway.
It does.
I don't respond to that. I've gotten elected. I just ran. I was elected by almost a million vote plurality. And I know what I'm doing. So, you know, maybe people should listen a little bit.
I hear what you're saying, but we're the people who voted you. You're supposed to listen to us. That's your job.
How old are you?
I'm 16. I can't
vote. Well, you didn't vote for me.
Well, she voted for
me. It doesn't matter. We're the ones who are impacted.
I don't give a fuck about you.
We're the ones who are impacted.
I understand that. I have 7 grandchildren. I understand it very well.
Senator, the cost of not taking this action is far higher than the cost of what the Green New Deal will be. And there is enormous popularity for this bill around the whole country. And we're asking you to be brave and do this for us and for your grandchildren.
Get enough for everybody. I'm trying to do the best I can, which was to run.
Yeah. That's the same person who didn't even bat an eye when Bill Clinton's rapist came forward. She protected Bill Clinton, and she protected Joe Biden. Progressives now say Feinstein failed in her leadership role as the top Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, which this week interviewed Barrett, a staunch conservative. "It's not like Dianne Feinstein and I have a lot in common," said the local lawmaker Hillary Ronan. "She's a very moderate Democrat, and I'm a very progressive Democrat. I expect us to disagree a lot of the time, but I feel like she betrayed a lot of us in that statement, thanking Graham for his fairness. There was absolutely nothing fair. The handling of this democratic process has been a travesty and the least fair thing that we've seen." Ronan said she was floored and crushed to hear Feinstein's remarks after the confirmation hearings. When people ask, "Why are you surprised? She's basically a Republican," "Well, I had never, in all the times I've seen her represent our state, expected her to betray us to this degree," Ronan said. "I don't know she fully realizes what her statement says to us as her constituents, who are about to see decades of civil rights gains go down the drain because of the sham proceeding orchestrated by the Republican Party and Mitch McConnell. But, dear listeners and viewers, we know better than just to blame Mitch McConnell. Look at Dianne Feinstein, and you know another person to blame." As it turns out, Hunter Biden's former business partner was sentenced after the court revives his fraud conviction. "I realize that this is guilt by association, but it's a very close association, I think you'll have to admit." Hunter Biden's former business partner will face sentencing in a fraud case after a federal appeals court on Wednesday reinstated his conviction. Devin Archer, a longtime business associate of Joe Biden's son, was convicted in June 2018 on charges related to his involvement in a scheme to defraud a Native American tribe. The 3-judge panel of the New York-based Second Circuit Court of Appeals reinstated Archer's conviction on Wednesday, ruling that the lower court abused its discretion in vacating the judgment and granting a new trial, and stating that Archer knew at least the general nature and extent of the scheme and intended to bring about its success. Now here's the association part. Archer worked with Hunter Biden on various business ventures, including serving with the Democratic presidential nominee's son on the board of Ukrainian gas company Burisma Holdings. Hunter Biden was appointed to Burisma's board in 2014 while his father was vice president and resigned from the board in April of last year after his lucrative position on the board drew scrutiny. In spring 2016, Joe Biden called on Ukraine to fire the prosecutor who had been investigating the energy company paying his son. The vice president threatened to withdraw $1 billion in U.S. military aid to Ukraine if the country did not fire the prosecutor, who was accused by the State Department and U.S. allies in Europe of being soft on corruption. So there you have it, folks. Everything that's not fit to print. As usual, I implore you to please help in getting the word out.